My mouth just got drier as I listened to that presentation. My name is Chris Curry. I'm a faculty member at Iowa State University, and I'm here today. I've got a couple of talks. I'm going to be giving one more presentation after the next presentation, and they're both focused on non-chemical growth control of containerized culinary herbs. And I couldn't get them both into one presentation, so that's why I had to split them into two. And this first one's going to focus on managing irrigation or substrate volumetric water content. So we have to use non-chemical approaches for containerized herb growth control. The reason is we have no PGR that is labeled for use on containerized edible crops. So there are a few things that can be utilized. First is cultivar selection. We can look back to our genetics to try and get the cultivar that we need. We can also use phosphorus restriction by eliminating that phosphorus, but you'll hear more about that in about 20 minutes. And there are also some techniques that we can use, like brushing, where we're going back and forth, and we have that thigmotropic response that inhibits elongation. Another popular technique is growing dry, and this is not a new technique, right? I mean, we've been doing that for decades, especially with tomatoes. That's probably one of the most popular crops that we tend to, when we're teaching bedding plant production, encourage students to dry it down fairly hard to try and control that growth. However, I also give students a caveat when they're growing dry. You can go from growing dry to growing dead fairly quickly if you're hand irrigating, because that's a fairly difficult balance to maintain, especially if you're using hand irrigation or boom irrigation. But the development of automated sensor-based irrigation systems makes it much easier to control that substrate volumetric water content and the moisture delivering your plants. And the citation I've got up here, Krishnan Amali and Mark Van Ursel's paper from 2006 in Scientia, is really the kind of the blueprint for this sensor-based irrigation system. And so here we have an example. This was an undergraduate research project in my lab, and we were just demonstrating the effect of substrate volumetric water content on the growth of, here we have a bedding plant, Nemiza fruticans, and you can see that as we go from 15% to 45%, the growth is increased. Now, if you also keep in mind the container that plant is growing in, that 4-inch container, 4.5-inch standard container, you can see that plant grown at 15% volumetric water content is appropriately sized for its container when we look at approximately 1.5 times the height of the container, or 60% of the total container size. So this can be used to keep plants compact. So the objective of our research was to quantify the impact of restricted irrigation on the growth and not tissue concentration, that's the next one, of basil, dill, parsley, and sage. So for this experiment, we received 288 cell plugs from a commercial producer. Now, these were received as a seedling plug with multiple seeds sown per cell. However, well, because herbs are commonly grown with a multi-sown plug. However, for the experiment, and to have some clarity in the plant physiological responses, we did thin our seedlings down to a single individual seedling per plant. They were then planted in a 4.5-inch diameter container filled with soilless substrate, a common peat perlite mix, 75% peat, 25% perlite, and we amended the substrate with 5 pounds per yard of slow-release fertilizer, controlled-release fertilizer. The reason being, if we had a water-soluble fertilizer and we have different amounts of solution that we're applying, you have a confounding factor. So by using controlled-release fertilizer, we can standardize for the nutrients across the different treatments. A little bit about the greenhouse environment and culture. We used supplemental lighting, high-pressure sodium lights, to try and maintain a DLI of at least 10 moles per day. This was done in the fall, and we're trying to hit that 10 to 12 moles per day that we use for greenhouse containerized crops. And we ran this experiment twice. First time was with parsley and sage, second time with basil and dill. And you can see our average daily temperature, as measured by aspirated thermocouples, was right around 23 to 24. Our day temperature was 24 to 25, and that was from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. And then our night temperature was just over 20, and that was from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m. And after we transplanted our plants into the containers, they were placed out, and we started our treatments. Everything was irrigated to the container capacity, and then the plants were allowed to dry down to different thresholds, going from 15% up to 45%. And the reason that we selected those ranges is 15 is about as dry. When you look across the literature, 15% can be okay for some crops. For some, it can be detrimental. So that's kind of how we view the low end. And then we chose 45% because that's about representative of a wet grower or a graduate student watering heavily Friday afternoon so they don't have to come in Sunday morning or Saturday morning. And again, these were maintained at the desired set points by using this precision irrigation system. To tell you a little bit about the experimental design, for each species, we used a randomized complete block design. Now, what we had was actually 20 total containers. We had two shuttle trays with 10 plants total blocked next to each other to try and simulate commercial production. However, we only used six samples or six individual containers out of that shuttle tray, so we eliminated all the plants on the outside. They were like a guard row or something like that. You could consider it like that. So we had those six samples per each of the three replications. And then we used regression analysis to analyze this. So first, just so you know that I'm keeping honest with my science, here you see we've got sage, dill, parsley, and basil, and you can see that on the x-axis we have days after transplanting, and then our y-axis is that substrate volumetric water content. And you can see that 45 to 15%, you can see those differences, and that they did achieve those set points and then maintain them quite consistently throughout the experiment. So here we have some images of what we actually saw. Here we have common sage and flatleaf parsley. This was from the first run of the experiment. And you can see that as you increase the substrate volumetric water content, we get more growth. Okay? You can see, too, that sage, you can almost start to see a little supra-optimal irrigation, almost growing too wet. Now, I will follow this up with graphs, but I wanted to show you images first so you could picture the plants. Here we have Italian largeleaf basil on the top row, and we have bouquet dill on the bottom row. And again, very similar trend. Increasing the volumetric substrate water content, plant size does get bigger. So here we have, this is our actual data. And for many of these responses, we tended to have a quadratic response with species, either quadratic or linear. And you can see that the height is increasing up till about 37-38%. Parsley width also increased with moisture. So this reflects the same trend that we saw. Again, our x-axis volumetric water content, y-axis is plant width. And again, this was the average width, the diameter of the plants. Also, we measured parsley leaf area. So what we did was select six individual leaves off of each of the six individual plants and then scan them. So when we say leaf area, this is not representing the total leaf area of the plant, rather just a single individual leaf. We only had a slight reduction in the leaf unfolding under the 15%, so this could potentially be extrapolated out to that total canopy, but we're not doing that and just presenting the individual leaf area. Now, I'm going to present the results for basil because that was a bit of a contrast to perhaps like parsley and dill. We still saw an effect. As you increased the volumetric water content, plant size did increase. However, you'll note that the magnitude of effect on basil was much less. Okay, so you don't have that large difference. We just have somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 centimeters, so 2 inches of difference, with relative to the total height of that plant was not a huge suppression of growth. And it was really the rest of the effect with basil really mirrored what we saw with parsley, but again, it was just to a lesser degree, so it wasn't totally effective. Now, we also wanted to look at some other effects of the substrate volumetric water content on plant growth, so we wanted to look at gas exchange. So using a Licor 6400 XT, we looked at single leaf gas exchange, and we found that photosynthesis for parsley was unaffected by that moisture, as well as conductance and transpiration. We didn't see an effect on the substrate volumetric water content on gas exchange for parsley. Similarly, we measured the chlorophyll fluorescence of these herbs to see if we were detecting any stress as reflected by a lower FV over FM, and we did not find that for any of the four species across any of the five volumetric water contents, which would make sense if you think about herbs, really. They tend to grow pretty well, and they tend to grow in poor areas sometimes when you look to their native environment. So they can be quite efficient in growing in poor conditions. Now, interestingly, with basil, we did see an increase in photosynthesis with increasing water content. And I was a little bit surprised by this because I thought we would have had higher photosynthesis under those lower volumetric water contents because of the less reduction or less suppression in growth. That wasn't the case, so this was fairly interesting to see. The other thing, going back to resource use efficiency in greenhouse crop production, when we look at the total volume of irrigation, so the number of irrigations multiplied by the volume per irrigation, you can see that that volume of water increases as you grow wetter, and that's or grow with more water, and that would make sense. That's going to be intuitive. Now, we have the same exact trend with basil, and the reason I bring this up is after presenting this data, you may be thinking that, well, basil may not be that responsive to growing dry, so I probably shouldn't do it. But I think that we can still realize some savings of our crop production inputs, irrigation water, even if we're not getting height control. So even though basil may not respond well with respect to height suppression by growing drier, it's still going to be an opportunity for us to have a fairly sizable reduction in the water used. Now, depending on where you are in the country, water may or may not be an issue, but I think we can all probably agree that reducing the inputs could be good for your bottom line, but it also would benefit the environment just as a best management practice. There are also good things. When you think of your best growers, they're generally dry growers. You tend to get less diseases, better growth, just overall produces better plants. So some conclusions and implications. Restricting the irrigation, growing drier, reducing the substrate volumetric water content, does have the potential to control the growth of containerized herbs. However, the magnitude of that effect is going to vary with species. But again, like that point that I just made with basil, regardless if we're getting the degree of height control or not, it still may be beneficial to consider reducing your irrigation simply to save on inputs. Now, for those species like basil that weren't overly responsive, it may be best to utilize substrate water content or growing drier in addition to other non-chemical height methods like cultivar selection or phosphorus restriction or brushing, and not relying on solely reducing the irrigation to suppress height. So it might work best compounded with other non-chemical means of controlling growth. So with that, I'd actually like to thank a number of people for this. And thankfully, most of them are in the room. Alex Litvin was the brain behind the operation. He came down from Mark Van Urso's lab. And with Mark's blessing, he let us, or we decided to put in one of these systems. Nick Flax, a former master's student in BAC, he helped our undergraduate through this project. And then Vince Metz was an undergraduate who helped us with this research project. Pete Lawler is our greenhouse manager who keeps everything under control and is cool about it. And Erica Schlichty is an undergraduate lab assistant. And J.R. Peters and Oasis support our hydroponic, our herb research. So with that, I'd like to take any questions you may have. Yes?
Chris, have you checked any chemical compounds like bullet or organ compounds?
No, I didn't, because I think that there is a big the thought where you're going is under those dry conditions stimulating or upregulating. The reason I didn't is because we had some limited resources to do this study, and to do those analyses takes a little bit more input. Also, this is more the focus was on growth control. And a little bit less on the flavor, because this could be a bedding plant that's going to be planted out as opposed to something hydroponic that's going to be directly sold and used immediately. I think that would be great, and I think it would be really cool if you could try and utilize some of this drought stress with an NFT, like cyclical cycling, to try and get that dry down. So I think there are some applications of reducing the provision of water nutrient solutions in hydroponics as well, but no is just the answer you're looking for. Here.
What was your nutrient solution, and how was it delivered?
We didn't use a nutrient solution. We used the controlled-release fertilizer, 5 pounds per yard, because that standardized it, because we have varying delivering of that that solution. So by using 5 pounds per yard, we could keep fertility consistent across that and across all the different treatments. And the release for the specific prill we used was not influenced by the degree of moisture. It was once it gets some moisture, then it starts to release, and then it's controlled by temperature. So we hopefully took care of that confounding effect.
Do you have time for another question?
Yes, sir.
So at what point do you say that, you know, you have your maximum, you know, goal yield, and you don't want more water? So do you reach that level where you say, okay, this is the maximum amount of water?
Well, I think we started, did you say maximum yield?
Oh, let's say...
The question was, when do you know you have enough water? And we sort of shot from the hip from some previous research where we thought 45% was a good maximum just from our observations and knowledge. But you'll see, due to that quadratic response for at least 3 out of our 4 species with height or mass, the vertex was somewhere between 37 and 45. So we think that we hit that at least for 3 out of our 4 species. We did not see that with basal.